Welcome back to Cinema Vino.
Cinema Vino.
Cinema Vino.
Cinema Vino.
Cinema Vino. This is going to be a look at our series on Oscar snubs. Coming up to the Oscars at the end of this month, we're going to look at movies that were not nominated. Great movies that were not nominated for one Oscar, for a single Oscar.
So, which, I mean, the biggest Oscar snub this year is Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah.
It's obviously insulting.
Yes. It was definitely better than some. Now that I've seen them all, I can say that it's better than some of the movies that were nominated for
Best Definitely Picture. Better than some of the movies that were nominated.
Yes. Absolutely. Not all of them.
No.
And I can't say that I necessarily think that it
I don't think it should win.
No.
It should have been nominated.
It should have been given the respect of being nominated.
Rude.
The validation of being nominated.
Yeah.
That not only can comic book movies be that good, superhero movies can be that good, but Marvel movies can be that good after all the hate they've taken.
Yeah. So. Yeah, but Academy, give some respect to these Marvel movies, because that one was legit good.
Yeah, I mean, Spider-Man is the pinnacle of MCU movies so far.
I get the complaint against like big title blockbuster action movies, but like this one was legit good.
I mean, I do and I don't. It's like, I mean, big title blockbuster movies, it's like, they're supposed to be fun. You know, they're supposed to be enjoyable. They're supposed to be...
Right, and I've seen people complain like, oh, well, you know, the reward is the box office numbers that they get. It's like they get $1 billion. Is that not enough?
That's
like
a bunch of hogwash, you know?
It's getting $1 billion because it's a good movie. Yeah. Fucking acknowledge that it's a good movie.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's like the argument of like, well, you know, oh, these Marvel movies are just comic or amusement park rides. They're roller coasters. You know, the Scorsese argument.
Yeah, roller coasters are good.
They're fun.
Not everything has to be a walk in a fucking desert.
Yeah.
Scorsese.
Yeah. That kind of fun, like it fills a very necessary role in life. And it's like, you know, and on a related note, you're an old grouch. So there's that.
Yeah.
So
Ridley Scott.
Yeah. The whole batch. Brian De Palma. I mean, the whole group. Francis Coppola. They're all old and grouchy.
All old and grouchy.
I love their movies and I respect what they've done, but they're all grouchy. And, you know, they need to take a nap.
Yeah. They do need to take a nap and then release some quotes about stuff.
Yeah. It's like, have a peanut butter sandwich and take a nap. I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah. So what snub are we watching today?
We're going to talk about Heat.
Heat.
1995 Michael Mann film. And we are drinking the Camp Merlot. We're drinking a Merlot, which I feel like, as we talked about in our earlier Batman podcast, has been a snubbed varietal.
The Batman.
It gets the Batman, yes.
Yeah, as a varietal, the Merlot is much treated like the tea in Merlot.
It gets maligned, yes.
Silent.
Yes, that's exactly right. And the Camp is, we drank earlier the Lacole Merlot from Washington State, which was a little more drier, a little more austere, I guess would be the word, a little leaner.
Yeah, I would say a little beefier.
Yeah.
The Camp is juicy.
Very fruit forward.
Yeah.
Very jammy.
Every sip I take, I get a little bit more fruity.
Yeah. We were talking about how it's like it's got a little bit of black currant to it. You know, it's like it's got a little bit of jam. So to me, it's like you took like a spoonful of black, like jam. And
it reminds me of my days visiting the Amish. They would make some jams.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, we would summer in Missouri.
Ooh.
There was a nice little Amish community near where we were. So we would go and get jellies and jams and really nice.
Yeah.
This reminds me of those days.
Nice. Yeah. And it really kind of has that color to it, if you look at it.
It does. It's very much jammy.
Very deep purple. Grape. Yeah.
Oh, it's a great band.
Deep Purple is a great band. I was a Velvet Underground guy myself, but that's neither here nor there.
Oh, well. Your parents weren't as hippie as I am.
It's true. But yeah, Camp Merlot. This is a 2019 from Sonoma County. Very different animal from Lacole, which is Washington State. So you can just kind of taste a different flavor. Same grape, but different regions.
Two grapes that taste grape together?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yep.
So I've got some brief background on Heat.
Heat.
We will talk about a great movie, one of my favorites.
It's a tremendous movie.
Yeah.
Great cast. I mean, you got Pacino. You got...
De Niro.
Yep, you got De Niro.
You got Val Kilmer.
Yeah, and those are the three main casts, like the top billing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting to see Val Kilmer kind of sandwiched in the middle of those two.
Yeah.
So those were power players back then.
Mm-hmm. And he was A-list at that point. You know, he had already done Batman.
Kilmer?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And a lot of people said he should have been nominated for an Oscar for Tombstone.
Yes. So if you haven't seen Val, the documentary, highly recommend that. Great. I think that's one that we want to podcast on at some point. But
it is on Hulu, last I checked. So I would definitely look for it there.
I think it's on Amazon Prime.
Is it?
I think so.
I was thinking that. But yeah, definitely look both places. Great documentary.
Tremendous. Yeah. Self-published. Self-made. It's like an autobiographical documentary.
He and his son, Jack.
Yeah.
Jack provides the voice.
But he has a ton of footage from a bunch of movies, and one of them was Heat, and mm-hmm. him talking about the difference between his experience on Batman and then going over to Heat.
Yeah. Sounds like he had a great experience on this movie.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
You know, having a great script and...
Great director.
Being able to move around as opposed to...
being in a rubber suit.
Yeah. Where no one can hear you. Yeah.
Where you lose consciousness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've heard more than one actor say you can't go to the bathroom. It's like you have to plan ahead.
Yeah. So it's like going to see the Batman.
Yeah.
Plan ahead.
Yeah. I've honestly heard that about wedding dresses where it's like, you know, it's like it's wearing those massive, huge wedding dresses. It's like you have to plan way ahead.
That's why I never wear a wedding dress.
Exactly.
Just sweatpants most of the time.
Very casual. My wedding was very casual. So, Heat was directed by Michael Mann, who directed Last of the Mohicans with Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yep.
He actually helped create Miami Vice, the TV show.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then directed the movie version of it with Colin Farrell and Jamie Foxx, which was not great.
How did he luck out with this movie and then with Daniel Day-Lewis? Like, that's a great slate of actors.
Yeah. And then he did The Insider, which is also a very underrated movie. About the cigarette lawsuit, like the
without not to be confused with The Outsiders.
Yes, the opposite of that.
Yes,
the Al Pacino was in that one as well, and Russell Crowe, who put on a lot of weight to play the part, and basically sure,
to play that part,
he was a because he lost it again for Gladiator. This pre Gladiator, he plays a cigarette scientist. Doctor or whatever, who is...
Please, I'm a cigarette doctor.
He is from one of the big tobacco people. He's like the scientist who is helping to, basically, you find out, engineer the cigarettes to be more addictive.
He's Dr. Spaceman from 30 Rock.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, like, highly...
No one really knows how cigarettes work. I mean, it's healthy for you. Does it make you feel good?
He is that guy until his conscience takes over. It's like he is... basically engineered to make them even worse.
Yikes.
Yeah. And it's like that's his whistleblower thing in the movie. It's like, you know, I was a scientist who was paid to introduce things that made these cigarettes even more addictive. Not only did they know they were addictive, but they wanted to make them more so. And not only did they want to make them more so, they wanted to target younger and younger people. So
hey kids, you know what's cool? Smoking.
Yes. So and it's based completely on a true story. Like he plays
I fully believe it.
Yeah. So, Insider is a great movie. Michael Mann directed that. That was his first movie, I believe, after this one was.
Okay.
So, I would recommend that one highly. That's a great movie. This is a remake of a script that he did for a television movie called L.A. Takedown, which was made into a pilot but never developed into a series. Obviously, all-star cast, as we're saying, that the big deal was made about Al Pacino and Robert De Niro appearing together. They were both in The Godfather Part II, but they shared no scenes because De Niro was Pacino's father in flashbacks. He played the Godfather as a young man. So they had no scenes together. This is the first time you actually see them together on camera. Probably two of the very most decorated actors of the 20th century.
Great chemistry. Mm-hmm. I mean, and they were decorated actors in kind of the same... They were both... late 20th century gangster movies.
Icons.
You know, and the gangster movie genre we've talked about has, you know, kind of gone the way of, or it went the way of superhero movies, yeah. Right? It sort of became, Westerns were a big thing, and then gangster movies were a big thing after that. Mm-hmm. And everyone was kind of like, oh, gangster movies, it's kind of like the cheap content.
Yeah.
They were the kings of gangster movies.
Yeah.
Right? Scarface, mm-hmm. Godfather.
Serpico.
I mean, you had, and, you know.
Goodfellas.
The Irishman.
Yeah. Casino.
Yeah. I mean, all we needed was Ray Liotta in this movie, and it's like, we're done.
Yeah. He could have been the Val Kilmer.
He would have been terrible in that role.
Yeah. I remember the Roger Ebert review of this movie said that a lot of actors will base their performances on like real life criminals and cops, but De Niro and Pacino are so iconic that there are probably real life cops and criminals who base themselves on them.
Yeah.
On their movies.
That's great. Yeah.
It's like that's how big they are. But the whole cast is amazing. I mean, you got Val Kilmer, Tom Sizemore, Ashley Judd, Danny Trejo.
Yes.
Very young.
Danny Trejo.
John Voight, looking rough.
Yep. That handlebar mustache, though.
Yeah.
It's a good look.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was very Wild West.
Yeah.
So this inspired a lot of true crime movies that came afterwards. You can tell how heavily influential this was. So many Netflix series. So many like things that you watch now that were based on this, including the Dark Knight trilogy.
Well, what was it about Heat that kind of, what was it about Heat that was like inspiring? Was it the way that they portrayed the thieves or the bad guys? I mean, there weren't bad guys, right? It was just.
It was very blurry.
Yeah, it was good guys that you sided with and bad guys that you sided with.
I mean, it was. I mean,
you wanted them to succeed in the heist.
I mean, to me, it was a prototype of The Departed, where it showed them on the good guys and the bad guys, or the cops and the thieves, on parallel paths throughout the movie.
Yeah,
you could see them both kind of going through the same problems in their lives. You know, you would see like, you know, De Niro dealing with like his relationship. Basically, it's like I told my wife, it's like both these guys are lousy spouses.
Oh, garbage.
And
garbage people.
Because they're essentially married to each other via their jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, so, you know, De Niro makes it explicit when he says, like, you cannot be attached to anything that you can't walk out on in 30 seconds. And so that's a very, like, spiritually empty way to live.
Well, and that's a theme that he plays on or points out multiple times in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, at the beginning, you see him... start to develop these attachments to a girl, but then you also see him live up to that credo at the end of the movie. He abandons her when he feels the heat around the corner.
He lives it.
Yeah.
But Pacino also lives it. It's like anytime he's with his wife,
his third wife.
Yeah. His third wife. And the phone rings, the beeper goes off. He's gone. You know,
in the most, Natalie Portman's in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
When she has a suicide attempt, they're in the hospital, and his fucking beeper goes off.
Yeah.
What does he do?
He leaves.
He runs off. Like, worst stepdad in the world.
Yeah.
But great cop.
Yeah.
Great cop.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like, and not only that, but like once De Niro and John Voight discover that he's the one hunting them down, it's like, that's why you should be afraid of him.
Yeah. He's like, I don't think this guy spends much time at home. He just is constantly chasing after the bad guys.
Yeah.
But he, also gets a little bit of insight into his level of respect for him. You know, he gets some like, oh yeah, this guy like talks you up all the time.
Yeah.
Like he's talking about like, he has a lot of respect for you. He says like, this guy's good. He's idolizing you. You see some of the camaraderie between them, even if they don't have that direct camaraderie, except you do. You get to see him. He pulls him over,
mm-hmm.
and then they go and get coffee.
Yeah, which is one of the most
cute little date.
That's the iconic scene in the movie. That spot in that restaurant in LA is now a tourist spot. In that diner.
Why? Just because of Heat?
Because those two actors sat there. Literally everybody who goes in that diner wants to sit at that exact same table.
I don't want to do that.
No, I know I don't either. But it's like they have pictures of them plastered all over the restaurant now.
I mean, I would too. Yeah.
So, I mean, it does have that kind of historical like trivia of like, this is the first time De Niro and Pacino filmed the scene.
Shit, together. You also have the Allstate guy.
We talked about that too, my wife and I, where it's like, you know, where he's first going to get his job. It's like, man, I hope he's in good hands.
I hope he's in good hands.
It's like, man, what a great voice. How could you not hire somebody with that voice? You know?
Yeah.
Are you in good hands?
Well, and I think that movie that part of the movie is also commenting on, the trap, basically, of if you are a con, you can't get a job that's going to pay a living wage. You can't get a job that's actually going
to
treat you.
You have to steal.
You have to steal. You have to stay in a criminal lifestyle.
Yeah.
you're forced to live that lifestyle just to survive.
If you have any dreams or ambitions, you have to steal.
Yeah. You have to be forced to be the driver for a getaway of a bank crime.
You know, it's like, yeah. And you look at De Niro, who wants to get away with somebody. His dream is to have somebody to go away
to
with.
To go to New Zealand.
And see algae.
Interesting choice.
Yes. But it's like, to do that, he has to steal.
Yeah.
You know, he cannot walk away. He is the classic, and I hate to say it's a cliche because I love this movie and I hate to use the word cliche, but it's like, he is the classic, like, one last job guy of, yes, like, one more job and I'm done.
Well, and I feel like this movie is what created the one last job trope.
It definitely pushed it further. Yeah.
I think this was like I keep trying to get out and they just keep pulling me back in, which is Pacino
and
which
Godfather. Is, yeah.
Yeah. You know. Different Pacino movie.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's that trap.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel like also it's like, yeah, this movie, it has the cliches, but it's like, it's tough to say whether it invented the cliches or it's like it takes earlier cliches and pushes them further.
Right.
You know,
how fresh was this in 95? You know,
I would say, because I saw this in the theater, believe it or not.
I was 5 years old.
You were very young. And I was too young to see it. It was R-rated. And I was too young to see it at the time. I was underage. But, you know, I had the theater in Sand Springs, the Cinemark 8, where they let me in all the time from, like, being very, very young. So my mom would go shopping and drop me off. And I would go see whatever at whatever age.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was great. Although I remember distinctly telling her once she picked me up from this theater, like,
I liked Heat.
You missed a good movie. It's like, that was badass.
It's like 3 hours long.
Yeah.
I mean, I can imagine me as a five-year-old. I would not have.
That would be tough as a five-year-old. Yeah. Especially all the people get shot in the head.
I was really big into Power Rangers. I tell you what, Al Pacino at no point morphs into a Power Ranger.
Which would have made this movie so much better.
Morphin time.
I gave it 5 stars. I'd give it 6 if he turns into a Power Ranger.
Fuck yeah. At one point, fucking De Niro calls his Zord, and then they're just storming the bank.
It's like, suppose you do got me boxed in. I got to turn into a Power Ranger.
Yeah, I got to call him a fucking Zord.
I got to be the Super Trooper V or Warriors.
They weren't obnoxiously Italian. I appreciated that. They were very much like grounded characters.
Yeah, and that what you heard in that impression was me doing a very bad.
Doing bad De Niro?
Yeah, which my bad De Niro.
Well, De Niro, you know. It's
like, you know, hey, I wish I could do a better Pacino too. It's like where he, again, we've talked about it. When you watch this movie, he literally hangs up on everybody he talks to on his cell phone.
Just violently folds his phone in half.
On his Motorola flip phone, he literally like will end a sentence and then hang up without saying goodbye. And I love it, and I wish I had the balls to do that.
I am going to unapologetically impersonate Al Pacino in the best scene in this movie because she had a grimace.
You had your head all the
whole way up it.
That scene, so that's with Hank Azaria. When you go back and watch the movie, Hank Azaria is the guy that Ashley Judd is cheating on. She's married to Val Kilmer.
She's married to Val Kilmer, and she is cheating on him with a fucking car salesman, or like a...
Yeah, he's a liquor wholesaler.
Sure.
And he's smuggling cigarettes. That's why
they're... Liquor wholesaler out of Vegas.
Yeah. And so Pacino improvised saying, "No, she got a great ass." And supposedly Hank Azaria's reaction is real from like, what the fuck is
because
this?
Because that was an improv line.
Yeah. It is so
which is
awesome.
Like the most iconic line. And it's Pacino in 100% full Pacino. I think this might be the best Pacino movie.
It's up there for sure.
I mean, Godfather's so good. But yeah. Scarface, amazing.
And you could argue that Godfather is first and foremost a Marlon Brando movie.
Yes.
I mean, obviously Pacino is huge, and Godfather 2 is a Al Pacino movie.
Do you think Marlon Brando actually memorized his lines for Godfather, or did he read them off of a
He did not. No, what he did, and there are pictures of it you can Google, Robert Duvall had his lines taped to his suit.
Yeah.
So he's reading off of, like, Robert Duvall's cummerbund or whatever.
Tremendous.
There are actual Google images of that.
That's amazing.
Because...
If you don't know, Marlon Brando is the laziest actor in the world.
Yeah.
Props to him.
But, I mean, he really is. It's like what Doc Ock was like, brilliant but lazy.
Yes.
You know, it's like he was somebody who was so amazing he could step back and rest on his laurels. Because it's like literally he was reading his lines. He won the Academy Award for that.
For more behind-the-scenes images of Marlon Brando, watch Val again.
Yeah. Oh my God. And that was such a sad sequence where Val, it's like what they say, never meet your heroes.
Yeah.
Val is working, Val Kilmer's working the island of Dr. Moreau with Marlon Brando. And you see Marlon Brando swinging in a hammock.
Give me a push.
I mean, it's very Jabba the Hutt-like. I mean, he is a lifeless individual swinging in this. And, you know, Kilmer hypes him up as the great man.
I'm so honored to be working with Marlon Brando.
It's like he's going to go ask the guru, like the all-time greatest, maybe the greatest actor of the 20th century, a question. I mean, I would say, honestly, Brando is the greatest movie actor of the 20th century.
Doesn't even memorize lines.
Doesn't memorize his lines. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like how Shaquille O'Neal would show up 40 pounds overweight and then score 30 points and get 18 rebounds in a game, you know, and win the MVP.
That's fair. Yeah.
You know, or it's like how Mickey Mantle would show up for the Yankees and hit a home run one-handed, you know. It's like it's almost a frustrating level of greatness. That's it's fair. Like,
yeah.
You know, Brando shows up and reads his lines off of, like, Robert Duvall's crotch and wins the Oscar and then turns it down. And that's his second Oscar.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's
power move. What a power move.
It's like Michael Jordan when somebody was daring him that he couldn't make free throws and he starts shooting them with his eyes closed and making them.
Yep.
You know, so it's like that's what you're dealing with on that level. Jack Nicholson once said that the joke was he lived on a street with Warren Beatty and a bunch of other famous people, including Marlon Brando. His thing was like, when Brando dies, we all move up a notch as actors.
Yeah.
It's like, that's how much respect was paid to Brando as an actor. He was like the greatest movie actor who's ever lived. As weird as he was, you know, he's one of those people who his weirdness almost outshines his genius.
Yeah.
But where were we before I got off on that tangent?
We were talking about Val Kilmer.
Mm-hmm. And meeting him and approaching him and being in awe of him.
Yeah.
And it's like where Brando's like, you know, after all that hype, Brando's like, give me a push, please.
Yeah, give me a push.
It's like such a letdown.
But yeah, we were talking about Pacino working in, I don't know.
Yeah, we were talking about something. It's like, so back to the original point. This is a very influential movie. It inspired the Dark Knight trilogy. Christopher Nolan had his like cast and crew watch Heat.
This is a beautifully shot movie.
Yeah.
I mean, just very well done.
It's very edgy.
For 95, this aged very well.
Yes, it does. I'm watching it now. It's like the scenes that were shot at night were really shot at night. They look like they were shot at night. Even up to that point, it was common to shoot scenes at night during the day. You would commonly see movie scenes shot during the day, and then they would turn the contrast up and make it look like night. Make it look like a full moon or whatever. But these scenes were legitimately shot at night. So
between Al Pacino and De Niro, who do you think had the better performance?
They're honestly, I think, neck and neck. They do such a great, they're very, very different.
They really do. They just are so well matched.
De Niro is very much like buttoned down, very controlled, mannered. Somebody pointed out that there's so many little details in this movie of how De Niro's clothes are always perfectly ironed, perfectly starched, because he spent a long time in prison. He did a long stretch of prison, and so in there he wanted to be a good inmate. And so he always showcased how clean his clothes were to be like on good behavior. And so now he kept that habit as a citizen, and so his clothes are always perfectly ironed and perfectly starched.
I was really not impressed. I was really struck by how young he looked.
Yeah.
I mean, Pacino has definitely aged since then, but he already had like a little bit of a grizzled like look.
Yeah.
Like De Niro, he looked really young in this movie.
He did.
He looked really svelte and like...
They're roughly the same age with too.
It. Yeah. And so I thought that was really striking was like just looking, I mean, granted 25 years ago, 27 years ago now.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Crazy to think about like how much time has passed, but like just think about The Irishman with De Niro, he looks much different now.
Yeah.
So when they de-aged him for The Irishman, you know, I think they should have pulled from Heat.
Yes.
For their inspo rather than doing whatever they did
Because it's like watching The Irishman, it was like he looked, even when they de-aged him, he looked like...
He looked like an old man with a mask.
Like an 80-year-old man walking. Like he walked very stiffly.
Because he is.
Yeah.
He is an old man walking.
And it's like they could have like fixed that by, like you say, basing on it. Where he's very agile in this movie.
Oh, he's very agile. Yeah. Yeah. He's spry.
They have very long chase scenes. Supposedly...
On foot, no less.
Yeah. The bank robbery, which is the centerpiece of the movie.
Climax.
The real life bank robbing group tried to duplicate this scene, and I believe it was Los Angeles.
Did they really?
Not only that, but the scene of the robbers like retreating has been used as a training tool for military units on how to tactically retreat from a gunfight.
Huh.
It's so like that they do such a good job of tactically retreating that has been a training video.
Well, and there's so much accuracy in it. I mean, they have like bulletproof vests. They have multiple magazines like stacked into their vests.
Mm-hmm.
Like they don't skimp on details. Like yeah. They did such a good job of this movie, like showcasing, but using real inspiration for how they were doing it. I think that was a really impressive piece of this movie.
You'll see both characters on both sides where they will do something you never see in movies, where they will literally open up the chamber of their pistols and make sure that there is a bullet loaded into the barrel before any sort of a situation comes up. You don't see characters do that, where it's like, if you know about guns, you don't necessarily know that there's a round ready to go unless you check and see.
Yeah.
And so you will see people like Robert De Niro literally check the chamber of their gun to make sure that they're ready to go before they get into a gunfight. There's little details like that that it's like you can tell that they probably interviewed real people about it, or it's like they did their proper research and made sure like they look like actual people in those situations.
And that seems like something that the director would have like dictated as, you know, this is something you're going to do because you're familiar with guns and you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like the starch collars, you know, where it's like they figured out like, you know, De Niro's character would always be perfectly starched. You know, because he doesn't want to, you know, it's like this is the habit. You don't want to get in trouble with like the guards or whatever in prison. So his clothes are always immaculate.
You know, one thing that kind of bugs me about this movie, you don't see what happens to Val Kilmer's character.
Yeah.
You know, he gets away,
mm-hmm.
but you don't see where he ends up.
Yeah.
And I kind of wanted to see like the Zihuatanejo, like on a beach somewhere, like safe and sound.
I'm gonna guess he doesn't get away safe and sound, knowing like,
but that's the thing, we don't know. I'd like
it
to
does
see
leave that,
you know.
I'm gonna guess, I mean, just based on how they establish a character, like that he is his own worst enemy, he gets killed somewhere,
yeah,
you know, that he doesn't make it out,
and but he cut his hair and he dyed it.
Mm-hmm. And you know, yeah, they go to like, I think it's a vet or whatever, or like a cut rate like voodoo doctor to get him like his bullet wound taken care of, which was Jeremy Piven.
Yeah.
Playing that role.
Yes.
It's crazy, like, the amount of people that show up that are, like, famous now that are just in bit roles throughout this, including William Fichter, who plays in The Dark Knight, the bank president or whatever. They cast him because he was in this movie as the, like, the offshore drug guy that they try to rip off.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That specifically because he was
in Van Zandt.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, they it's amazing the number of people that are famous that started in this movie that you see.
It really is. So you said it was replicated by like a real life bank heist job?
About 5 or 6 years later, they were like a group that tried to do like the Heat bank robbery.
I mean, that's the thing, is like this movie seemed like they were a little bit too authentic. Like you could replicate some of this shit.
Yeah.
Like you could really knock off a fucking armored truck with bear bonds, like $1.3 million of bear bonds.
It was too real. Because it was like my wife and I watched a movie.
It was too legit to quit.
Yeah, exactly. Hey. We watched a movie called The China Syndrome, which involves a nuclear meltdown. It came out in the 70s. And it's a great movie with Jane Fonda, Jack Lemmon, Michael Douglas. And it's like this news crew goes to film like this puff piece about a nuclear plant and how great it is, but then they end up accidentally filming a meltdown at the core. They don't, you know, like the guy keeps his camera rolling while the thing goes to hell. And supposedly in the movie, it's like there's a one of the instruments gets stuck at a certain reading, and they don't realize that the needle is stuck. That's the only reason it's happening. And so they react as though the needle is stuck at this certain reading. And so they drain all the water or whatever, which means they would have uncovered the core. It would have been like a Chernobyl situation.
Yeah.
And so they get done, and then they go to the people afterward, the producers, like the real people at whatever reactor, like, how did you know about that? It was someplace in the Midwest. Like, so that really happened somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, how did you hear about that? So that kind of strikes me as heat, where it's like, it's so accurate. It's like, you got to wonder, it's like, are people watching
the you get a knock on the door from the FBI, just like, how did you know about that?
Yeah. It's like so real life, and it feels like it, watching it.
Yeah.
It has a very you are there quality to it.
Yeah, the details that are put into it, like how they go about the process, how they plan these heists, how they're looking and doing stuff, you know, getting the electrical engineering like diagrams of the bank and like how you can cut the you know, cut the alarms,
the cameras, and you know, being able to drill up and underneath stuff and have the schematic. Yeah, like you said, it's amazing.
It's just protected by like one layer of cement.
Yeah,
like you just got just easily cut that and then you're done. This movie had a lot of the feel of like, oh, if you dress up in like a you know, construction worker costume and like hold a clipboard, mm-hmm. you can get anywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Or in the beginning, it's like dress up as a paramedic, you know, just walk through a hospital. It's like you can steal an ambulance.
Yeah, absolutely. I loved the scene where they were just like in the middle of a like industrial area and just like pointing around because they knew that the cops were following them.
Yeah.
And they had the mics on them, and they came down there like, what were they looking at? Well, if you look up, there's nothing over there. There's nothing over there. What are they looking at?
Yeah.
What are they looking at? Oh, I'll tell you what they're looking at. I'll tell you what they're looking at.
It's like, we just I'll got tell made. You what
they're looking at. They're looking at us.
Yeah.
They're looking at us, the LAPD. Have a good look.
Such a great scene.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's a good scene.
It's like Pacino, like, and in that moment, De Niro realizes Pacino is like on his level. Mm-hmm. Like he just caught on what was going on.
Yep.
You know, it's like how fast he is. So it's like they're very much on the same level.
The cat and mouse game between Pacino and De Niro is tremendous.
Yeah. And it's like, and it culminates in the end where it's like, you know, it's very appropriate that Pacino, more so than either of the spouses or whatever, it's like they're there for each other at the end.
Well, and ultimately, De Niro was caught by his own hubris of like he would have gotten away if he hadn't taken the bait of killing the snitch.
Yeah.
Right?
Pride.
Yeah, it was his own, like, I just can't do it. I got to kill him.
Yeah.
I got to kill him. And he turns around and he goes, and he's like, we're taking one quick detour.
Yeah, it's bugging him, you know, and he could have gotten away with his lady friend.
He had a clean getaway.
He could have had everything he wanted. But yeah, I mean, it was like he couldn't let the idea of somebody thinking they got the better of him out there.
And this felt like, to me, it was one of those things of like, the director wouldn't let the bad guy get away scot-free.
Yeah.
He had to have him lose to have the movie conclude right.
Yeah. But it also kind of fits that, you know, like the idea of he is on the Alamo. It's like he's going to go down with that mythology of like, you know, I'm not going to be taken alive. I'm not going to go back to jail. And I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to be the guy that goes down with the ship, basically,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So it's like he, you know, he pulls that heist. He pulls one last heist, and he is basically too proud to ever admit that that was the wrong decision. And he goes down with that decision at the end.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and it was, he was ready to cut and run, but he left it up to his crew, and his crew voted to keep going. So I really think he was beholden to his crew, and he was doing it on his crew's behalf.
Either that, or he let them make the decision he wanted to make too, to take the heat off of him.
But his downfall ultimately was just his decision to take down the snitch.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, who was a creepy dude in the movie?
He was a creepy dude. They kind of threw in like a serial killer storyline, and they never resolved it.
They didn't develop that. That's one of the few, like, of a 3-hour movie. That's one of the few strands they didn't really.
Which, like, is weird to have in a 3-hour movie to not have resolution on.
Yeah. Everything else they do a pretty good job of tidying up at the end.
The only thing I can think is they were trying to show Pacino's character have, like, empathy.
Yeah.
And show him, like, hugging the mom of the victim and be like, it's all right. It's okay.
And how rough it is for him.
Yeah, because he's having to deal with these travesties day in, day out, and show, like, how tortured he is as a major crimes detective,
and then come home
yeah
to a wife who doesn't understand, basically,
yeah,
who can't understand. But again, it's
his third wife.
Yes.
Who didn't understand.
Exactly. And it shows, again,
what surely by the third time, he would have some way to communicate, like, how shitty of a husband he is, right?
Yeah. Or realize he shouldn't get married again in the first place.
Don't fucking get married.
Yeah. It's like, you are married to your job.
Yes.
That's a cliche, but literally, you need to be married to your job.
Yeah.
You know, you get the call in the morning and you work until 3 or 4 at night. That's your job. That's your life. That is your spouse.
So where do you rate Heat? 1 out of 5.
It's a 5.
5?
Yeah.
Strong. Yeah.
This is an all-time movie for me.
Yeah. Heat's a 5.
Yeah.
For me.
It's a 10, 1 to 10. You know, this is a movie that other movies want to be like, you know.
Yeah.
This
is the movie that every, like, heist movie aspires to be. The only other movie that I would think comps to Heat would be Baby Driver.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you loved Baby Driver as much as I did, but that movie's a 5 for me.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It definitely was. I enjoyed it a lot. I enjoyed the performances in it. That was Kevin Spacey, right?
Kevin Spacey, yeah.
Well, which, I mean, doesn't age well.
But itself, it's Edgar Wright as the director.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was, very clever, very fast-moving story.
Great soundtrack.
Yeah. Very well put together chases, all that. And yeah, I enjoyed it. I don't know if I enjoyed it as much as Heat. It's tough for me to find any, like, crime-related thriller that I enjoyed as much as this movie.
Yeah.
I've seen it so many times.
Well, there's a lot of heist movies. So there's a lot to comp to, but I feel like Baby Driver is to Heat as 310 to Yuma is to, like, an old school Western.
Maybe like Unforgiven, Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, like an old school Clint Eastwood. Like, it's a genre that the heist movie existed so heavily in the 90s that to see it perfected and done well and kind of like boiled down to its essence in the 2010s
mm-hmm.
is a completely different animal than seeing it when there were so many other competitors at the time.
Yeah.
So Heat is the best of the best because it was the best movie to stand out at the time that there were so many others to compete with.
Yeah.
But to see it redone well in like a more common era.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to compare to.
I mean, it gives you that kind of comfort of it can still be done.
Yeah.
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 It's like they can take something that was done so long ago and still do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Licorice Pizza, which Licorice Pizza is a play on American Graffiti, which was George Lucas's first big movie. So it's like it's that idea of that you can do.
THX 1138 was his first big movie.
I'd say it was his first movie for sure. That wasn't the first movie that really... American Graffiti really took him to the mainstream. It was his first big, wide-release movie.
You sure? You sure it wasn't Star Wars?
Star Wars definitely was next level. But I would say George Lucas was famous before Star Wars. At least his American Graffiti was for sure.
So it definitely wasn't around back then. So
no, nor was I. But it was definitely a big hit. And it introduced like Harrison Ford, Richard Dreyfuss before Jaws or Harrison Ford before Star Wars. Like it introduced a lot of famous people before they got really, really famous.
Yeah.
So, but that's a whole nother podcast about like for example, Steve Spielberg had Sugarland Express, which is a great movie that he did before Jaws. And then THX was great before American Graffiti, but it's like, or Mean Streets was good before Taxi Driver, but it's like, were these movies worthy of being like the first great movie, or did they just kind of like set the way for better movies for these?
Yeah,
these directors, and we could do that at a later podcast for sure.
Yeah, that's a whole other series,
whole other can of worms.
Yeah,
like for example, Paul Thomas Anderson did Hard Eight before Boogie Nights. It's like, and that's a great movie, but how many people have seen it? So we can go back to that for sure. But this has been another episode of Cinema Vino, talking about Heat, an all-time classic movie from the mid-90s. It is, I believe, available on HBO Max. Is that right?
No, I think I had to rent it on Apple Plus.
Interesting. Yeah, we'll do some research and see if that's out there anywhere. And if it is, I'll tag it on our websites. But the next movie, Rounders, is for sure HBO Max.
Definitely on HBO Max, yeah.
Yeah. But Sean Jordan, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Pleasure
it,
to be here.
It was a good time. Camp Merlot was our vino for this time.
This wine had a great ass.
You got your head all the way up it. And previously, La Colle Merlot, Washington State.
There, Cole.
Hoo-ah! That's just my little bit of...
I think both characters were Marines in this movie, right?
I think so. They're both military for sure.
Yeah, former Marines. Because I think one was mentioned as being a Marine, and the other had the Marine emblem on his shoulder.
Yeah.
Emblem?
Pacino, yeah. Insignia, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Both very much like exacting in what they did, very detail oriented.
Yeah.
On both sides of the coin.
Anyway, so hoo-ah.
Hoo-ah. Next time we're gonna do Rounders, another movie that a great movie got no nominations.
Great movie. Oh wait.
And we'll be doing a lot of Malkovich during that.
Yes, we will.
A lot of Malkovich.
Malkovich.
But this has been another episode of Cinema Vino, and we will see you guys real soon.
Be sure to listen, rate, and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Our website is at cinemavino.net, and reviews of these movies can be found at toddwoffordmovies.com.